This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Our rapidly moving information-based society badly needs people who know how to find facts rather than memorize them, and who know how to cope with change in creative ways. Now, you don't learn those things in school. Now, Idris, the focus for this CD is telling me how we can introduce and include these things in schools, where we can going to introduce the creativity. My first question to you is the following. There are those experts in the field who make a fundamental distinction between schooling and education. Now, I always thought it was basically much of a muchness. What is the difference between the two?
There are fundamental differences. You find that when you look at schooling, they are primarily concerned about assessment, it's about examination, it's about grading, it's about a few subjects, as it were. And you find that education is supposed to liberate you. Education is supposed to help you to unleash your potential. You find that in schooling, it's force-feeding children. It's almost like an oppressive environment. It does not consider at all the individual needs. There are no nuances. It's one way, this is the way. In other words, the curriculum, the syllabus is it, kalas. And the syllabus was given to us by the government, the syllabus we are using, and therefore that in this school there is no creativity, this is what we do, essentially. And I'm not surprised, for example, I think it was Mark Twain who said that his education was interrupted by his schooling. So you find, therefore, that many of the successful, truly successful people are those who have never, ever been to a school because their minds have not been circumscribed and confined. Now you find that in schools, there is no individuality. For example, from teachers to teachers, they are almost unidimensional in the way they approach things. And you find that school life itself has become today often completely irrelevant. You find that because their preoccupation is the results, you find that many educators who might have been creative initially, who come to the school environment, they also become part of the system. Because one of the things that really surprised me, Shami, it might even surprise you, if you look at the beginnings of modern education, and they had three very noble objectives. The one was, they said to make good people, to make good citizens, and to unleash the potential of the child. And I think any educator will not have issues, no matter which part of the world you come from. But now they appear to have introduced another objective that has become all-pervasive, and that objective is to make the students fit into your society. It's almost like an industrialized model. You know, this is what you do. It's like a machine. From here, you get into society. It's not about you critiquing your society. It's not about you becoming a leader. It's not about you effecting change in your society. In other words, you got to accept the status quo. It reminds me of Charles Dickens' book, Hard Times, when the person said at the beginning of the book, "All I want is facts, nothing but facts." And in other words, I'm not concerned about the effective, the emotional, the moral, the ethical, the spiritual. This is what I want. And therefore you find that textbook learning itself is totally inadequate. And therefore that has been the issue in many of our schools.
Okay, so as a teacher, I want to turn out good people. I want to turn out good citizens. I want to unleash their potential. How can I incorporate education in the schooling?
So what you need to do, again, is understanding the child, understanding the potential of the child, making sure, for example, that it's personalized learning, that everyone, each individual, learns differently. Some of us are audio, some people are kinesthetic, and a whole kind of situation. So get to know your learner. In that way, you're able to respond to his needs. Also, try to bring into the classroom real life situations, situations in which young people are going to deal with. For example, our society is so rapidly changing. There were some careers or some job that were available, say, 10 years ago, would be non-existent. For example, again, I came across this and this really shocked me. They say a person that goes to university, what he learns, if he's technical, in his first year, by the time he finishes off in his fourth year, what he learned in the first year is already obsolete. So it's changing. So what we need to do? We need to help children to cope with the changing world, right? So if you are only going to give them, inverted commas, some information, some facts in the narrow sense, how is it going to help them to adapt to that environment, to cope with that environment, not only cope with that environment, to be able to be in charge, not to be, you know, reactive, but to be proactive.
So if we get them to be in charge of their education, you know, your parents have put you into school, so you're there for a purpose. Children are sometimes saying, well, my parents are insisting that I come to the school and I'm here just because I have to. Their aim is to come to school on a Monday morning and work till 10 o'clock just for the break, and then work till 1 o'clock just for that other second break. And the breaks are more important, the schooling, so the lessons in between is interrupting their social life and their lifestyle. We need to get the children to want to be there. So we're saying, yes, they must take charge of their education. Now, I want you to give me, please, two practical examples. If I'm listening to you now, I'm enlightened. Yes, I'd love to do this because I know, you know, my lessons are a bit boring. Children are not too enthusiastic. Give me two practical examples. And then can I just give one as a start to say that, you know what, guys, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be doing a topic in English where we're going to be doing understanding what personification is. Your job is to go on the internet and bring me some information on that. You're going to email it to me, or if the school is allowed, where, you know, the kids are allowed to bring their laptop or their iPads to school for the day, and they come prepared for that information. Now, they're going to go home and they're going to have lots of fun. Think to the parents, well, I need to go online because they love it. They're going to go online, but they're going to be doing something constructive. They're going to come to the class and you as the teacher are going to just listen. They're going to talk. It may not be the words you want, okay? I'm a bit nervous as a teacher because I know I've got a beautiful worksheet done saying, personification means this. This is the key words you look for. Okay, guys, we've got three examples I'm doing as a teacher. Let's underline where we think the personification is. Now, here's a worksheet you're going to do for me. And you paste it in your book. And I know when it's time to study, you've got that to refer to. So the change would be they come with the research. They come and they talk. You put them into groups and they lead the discussion. It'll definitely not be examples you've had. It'll definitely not be the worksheet you've had. But they're now engaging. To me, that would be the lifelong learning because it came from them. I'm the author as a child of the example. And then as a teacher again, remember, I'm still wanting to be that much in charge. I can then still include that worksheet and said, guys, we're writing your examples. I've got a worksheet with the blanks. And we're saying, okay, group A, group B, group C, your examples were super. We're taking down your examples. How affirming it is when the quietest, and in my mind as the teacher, the weakest child gave the most powerful example. He's going to go home and say, hey, mom, that was my example. How empowering is it? The next day's lesson, when I need to do just theory, am I not going to get the children's undivided attention? Now, that was my example. If you can give me and the teachers just perhaps one or two examples, very practical, on how we're going to incorporate this lifelong learning.
You see, there are three fundamental things. It was John Taylor Gatto who said that schooling is like extended childhood. Therefore, kids are very, very bored. Now, the example that you cited is a wonderful example where the child, in essence, took ownership. But we need to go even beyond that. The idea, for example, there are some schools in Finland now are going to be so seamless, as it were, that they're not going to have any subject-specific matter. You know, it's no more the subject. I'm doing English now, that kind of thing. And therefore, some people are also speaking about how you use the social media, that you find that a dynamic teacher can incorporate other subject disciplines in his presentation, as it were, right? Now, the whole issue of lifelong learning is this, is, for example, even the example that you cited, to me, it's still too grammarian, it's too narrow. You're looking at a definition of personification. But, you know, for example, you could say to them, you know what, I want you to write a script about a family having a discussion.
Perfect.
And use that. The whole idea, they begin to realize that it's no more learning in theory, but learning as part of life. In other words, the language becomes alive, you know.
Tell me a story about your family. Write me 10 lines about it. So that would be the spaces.
Yeah, in that way, you
personal
see.
Personal learning.
Personal learning. And also, for example, you need, a teacher needs to be very, very vigilant, right? He notices, for example, that, say, Shamima is very, very creative, right? Ask her to do an artistic presentation of it. You find, for example, Akia is very good, you know, in jingles. He's very good. Ask him to do a jingle, you know, in a very poetic way. So what is happening is this. What you got to understand, the reality is there was a time many, many years ago, the only salvation for any young person growing up in the days of apartheid was through schooling, through university. That was your salvation. They spoke about a passport. But gone are the days. Gone are the days of an office. Gone are the days your computer could be an office. You could have an iPhone or whatever in your hands. So things have changed radically. So we need to understand that particular change. And therefore, what has happened, there is a big discrepancy between the changes and the reality in which many teachers are operating. They're operating in another world, another kind of planet. So what they need to do, essentially, to ask themselves this question, how can I make this lesson meaningful? That if I'm a 14-year-old kid, how would I like to receive this knowledge? How can I make it meaningful? That is not theoretical. How can I make it such that he can apply it in his life? And these are important questions one need to ask.
And what I like is you're not moving away from the fact that we still got to teach the content, because the content still has to be taught. But I think what you are saying is alter how I'm going to present it to the child, because I know oftentimes the teacher will say, you know, I've got to complete the curriculum. So you're saying, yes, still complete the curriculum, but just alter the way in which you're doing it. Okay, that now leads me to my next question. You know, main heading for the set of CDs is education in the 21st century, which means there's something different in what happened in the 20th century. Tell me what is the difference between education in the 20th and the 21st century?
If you were to look at the 20th century, they were characterized by the following, and I would suggest what differences should be in the 21st century. In the 20th century, we were hidebound by the curriculum. Number one, it was a curriculum, right? Two, it was time-slotted. You know what I'm saying? At a particular time, we need to complete the following things. There is 12 years of schooling, for example, right? Then, the other aspect of the 20th century is one size fits all. One size fits all. I mean, there's a lovely cartoon you came across, I don't know if you saw that, where this person is speaking to the fish and the elephant and the lion. He says, now let us see who can get to the top of the tree. Now, naturally, the fish will not get through. Now, does it mean the fish is inadequate? No, the fish is perfect in the water. It belongs in the water. So in essence, saying, find out where the person is more comfortable with, what are his inclinations, what are his flair. So that's one size fits all. The fourth aspect is, it was about competition, coming out first, second, and third. It's about competing. And as a result, one of the negative aspects of that, I found this without generalizing, maybe you are one of those that came out first, but you also contributed to society. I found that many of the students that have done exceptionally well at school in the earlier days, they are more concerned about themselves, about their own self-enrichment, the self-fulfillment. It was the average child who is a bigger contributor to society because he had other values that were not perhaps recognized at the school. The other aspect that you find, the classroom was a sole preserve of learning. Right? We made a distinction between the classroom and outside the classroom. The other aspect that you so eloquently emphasized was that you were textbook bound. Right? Textbook bound. Right? Then the other two aspects that I want to speak about, it was about summative tests, and the last one is learning for school. That was the 20th century. And I would add one more thing, that in the classroom, we are part of a theoretical vortex. The children had no say in any aspect of the school. Now, in the 21st century, what do we need to see differently? The curriculum has given place for projects. Now, in projects, you find it is much more student-centered. They're participating in it. And also, it wasn't no more time-slotted, but on demand. If, for example, something was needed at a particular time, it was done. In other words, it wasn't, you're not following, it's inverted commas, a so-called sequential, narrow, logical, you know, linear kind of program. If there was a particular need now, you responded to the need. The third aspect, which is fundamental, as opposed to one size fits all, it must become personalized learning, right? Personalized. In other words, the child must be able to say, the student say, you know what? The teacher spoke to me today. Right? And I'm able to do it. Why? He said, I can use my own creativity and do this in my particular way. Right? Personalized. The other aspect is, a contrast to the competition, is more collaborative.
Right.
Collaborative. You're working with others, working projects. And therefore, you find successful companies are those companies that have teamwork. In fact, Jim Collins, in his book, Moving from Good to Great, he said, if you choose any person in your company because he has one indispensable skill, and such an individual cannot fit into that because he thinks, you know what, I'm the man, they need me, I don't need you. And as a result, he cannot be a team player. So it's an important thing. The other aspect is, before we spoke about the classroom, the sole preserve of learning. Now it's become the global community. The global community. And today you can interact with the whole world. There's information available. You know, and it reminds me of another book called The Influenza, where the person said, there was a time when you could have said, you know what, well, I tried it, I couldn't work it out, I must have the serenity to accept it. He said, that's a serenity trap. You know why? Because somewhere in the world, someone has found a solution to that problem. And therefore, my educators, my head teachers, I tell you, if you are going to remain at your school, and do not leave the school, you are a big fish in a small pond. Travel the world. Confront your real self. You realize that what is a problem is a solution somewhere else. They've found a solution to it. Then the other one is, we spoke about textbook-based. Now it's web-based. Now we are part, you know, of the web. This information, it's unbelievable, right? And no more of summative tests. Now they are formal evaluations that are taking place all the time. And the last point, this is very important. In school, at one time, it was learning for school. Now, as a point that you made, we are learning for life. This to me, are the critical differences. And you find, and in the differences, what you really find, that the gone are the days of the school, the classroom, as it were, in the form that we knew it, where the teacher thinks he's a sage on the stage, the fountain of knowledge. Gone are those days, because our society has changed radically, and we need to take that into cognizance.
Thank you very much for that long, long description. But, I mean, it's made me understand that there's this marked difference between education as it was, education as we now need it to be. There are a lot of people listening who are going to say to you, yes, you know what, I'm doing some of that. And I want people to be saying that. I want teachers to say that, because if you understand that, yes, you've done that, that means you already know what you need to do more of in order to get your foot a little bit more into a 21st century classroom environment, where you're using the web, where you're using the internet, where you can collaborate with the school in another part of the world. So it's just the innovation on the part of the educator. And that then leads me to my next question, Idris. What are the implications for schooling and the teacher in today's climate?
You know, as Sir Ken Robinson said, what our schools require is not reformation, but a revolution. A revolution, a radical, radical change. So my first recommendation would be that on a weekend, the stakeholders, including the students, ex-students, the parents, the teachers, need to have a thorough, robust discussion about where we are, where we need to go to. And it's fundamental, fundamental. We need to look at that. And then we also need to have perhaps someone presenting from a so-called futuristic school his ideas, and he can talk about where they are moving to. In that way, what will happen, then we would realize that the journey that we have undertaken is going to be a long journey, but a journey of change. Now, you've got to also ask yourself, this is a fundamental thing. People respond to change in three different ways. A visionary would initiate the change. A pragmatist will follow because the leader says so. But the conservative, he would find all the creative reasons why we should not change. And change is the only permanent thing in life. So what I'm saying, that we are moving, the schools are moving, but are we moving in the right direction? Are we, for example, going to contribute to the upliftment of our young ones? Will they look back at the schooling and say, my gosh, you know what? They showed me the way. They enlightened me. They inspired me. Or are they going to say, whatever they taught us is irrelevant. I cannot even use it. Because in another study that was done, they say 70% of what you learn in the matric examination is forgotten 3 months after the examination.
And the poor children learn so hard, Idris. You know, going back to what you just said, when you said that recommendations for the teachers, the pupils, the parents, is they have, as one would say, an indaba together. It's important getting all the role players together to say, hey, guys, we're seeing that we need to move in the 21st century. Our class is almost there. What can we do to improve? So role players are having a voice to say, let's try and implement this change. Let's take out half an hour a week and let's get the children to all engage in reading outside on the lawns. Something different. I mean, I'm using a very simplistic example. I'm not using something so radical. Then something more radical could be, let's say in our grade, all the way up to grade 9, we're not going to have any examinations at all. But you're going to have formal assessments, but our formal assessments will be on watching you collaborate, watching you working in your group, and we assess you in your groups. Because if we can get a buy-in from parents, and if we can get a buy-in from the teachers as well as the pupils, then doing something like that eases the pressure on the teacher, and the teacher is then able to use these creative methods, because we're going to talk about how to be creative in the classroom just now. So now we're going to set the stage for the teacher to say, yes, You can be creative, but then we need to take away some pressure from the teacher, you know, in how to do that. But my worry would be, and I've seen it in schools, you know, the child who's doing very well, that child is going to feel disadvantaged now because that child gets 100%, 99%, beautiful stars, always well done because that book's meticulous and neat. And the pupil who's like perhaps you, Idris, whose books are unkempt, who who doesn't complete a day's task because the child just can't concentrate because you're the one who just wants to talk more than do, right? You, the pupil who's going to love this model, and your parents are the ones who are going to love this model. But how do we explain to both sets that, yes, the child who's doing academically well is going to gain some advantage as well? Because we can see the advantage that the child who's, you know, not working so well in, the advantage they're going to get is, you know, their self-esteem is going to increase and all of that. But what advantage is it for the very academic child?
You know what? In fact, no one will be disadvantaged.
That's right, for sure.
And you see, that's the point. For me, the school must be the collective skills that you have in the community. Because we have some incredible, creative, very, very bright people in our community. They need to also participate in the school, whether to inspire the teachers, inspire the learners, number one. Now, what has happened, you see, because we're caught up in a curriculum trap, as it were, we are products of our experiences. We cannot think outside the box. For us, it's very, very hard to imagine a school except the way we are in it at the moment. The other important aspect is this, that when you are at school, you've got to ask yourself, you know, who are the people that get the stars? Who are the people that get the brownie points at school? So the point that you made, yes, the child that is bright academically, he'll also, for example, you know, get his whatever, you know, his affirmation and all of that.
Because he still will get the affirmation because the teacher will still see the power that that child has in the classroom. Am I right?
Yes. So in other words, you find that the critical aspect, the long and short of it all, is, you know, identifying a need in the community, unleashing the potential of the child, and also making sure that even though you're promoting, for example, the kid to do well academically, but you're not doing it in a tedious, boring way. Now, children themselves are participating in the process. The community is participating in the process. Because what you got to understand, right, and we need to speak about, we'll speak about it, right, is to look at what are necessary skills, right, of the 21st century. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about it. And then what you need to do, we need to work backwards. We need to work backwards in terms of to what extent are our schools helping children to develop those skills. Also, for example, what are some of the attributes that teachers in the school need to possess? For example, also what are some of the character traits the students need to have? And we need to work backwards and ask ourselves, are we helping our children to develop those character traits, those skills, so that they are able to navigate in those often the turbulent waters of the future?
Okay, Idris, you know, you've given me a lot of information, and I know we're going to be talking about this whole concept of character traits and character education a little bit later. But my final question to you for this segment is, in the classroom, in a school, what should schools be teaching?
That's a fundamental question. I believe they should be teaching kids how to think critically, how to access information. They must be literate far as the media is concerned. They must be able, for example, to unleash the potential. They must be able to embrace change. They must understand the world around them. What is it that is happening around them? In other words, we want them to be active participants rather than passive receptacles. That they need to understand that in this ever-changing world, there'll be a huge demand on them to do things differently. and they must be prepared to embrace the change, and most importantly, to have self-belief, especially when there is so much of pressure on them to perform. And they must also understand that excellence is a never-ending journey.
I like that ending. Excellence is a never-ending journey because, you know, there's the child who feels, you know, I'm perfect. I do so well in school. And in the classroom, they are the ones who are disruptive because they feel, I know the work, so I can fool around and there's no more learning. But excellence is a never-ending journey. I like that one. Okay, let me just recap, Idris, and if you want to come in, you can come in at the end. We're saying here in the CD that we want schools to be visionary in their thinking. We're saying, we spoke about the difference between schooling and education. We spoke about telling schools, telling teachers how to incorporate education into their schooling. And by that, we're saying, let's learn how to make our children good people, good citizens, and how to unleash their potential. We also understood then what a child is about in the classroom. We spoke about their potential, and we're saying teachers must teach children how to cope with the world, and that you spoke about that in your very last sentence just before I decided to do this recap. The teacher has to teach the children then how to take ownership of their learning. If they're able to do that, then I think we're on a winning streak and we're moving then into the 21st century classroom. You then described the 21st century classroom. You spoke to us about what the 20th century education is and what the 21st century education is about, and about personalized learning, make learning relevant to the children. Then you also spoke about recommendations for teachers, pupils, parents, how they must have a conversation on how to move fully into the 21st century and what schools should be teaching so that they are making learning relevant for the children.